The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, very good. Thank you. I hope you guys are doing all right and they're not suffering too much from cold weather. Here, our heat wave continues. People are being warned to stay indoors, to keep in the air conditioning, not to be out too much. Very, very hot and humid weather this week.
Crazy. The world gone, just the world gone completely mad and extreme in all ways. Palestinian factions will be meeting later today to discuss Israel's peace treaty with the UAE. I thought there was nothing really to talk about here. What's likely to come out of this meeting?
Well, what's interesting for me is that the Hamas political leader from Gaza, Ismail Haniyeh, has actually traveled to Beirut for this particular meeting, and he will be participating from Beirut in a video conference with the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas from the city of Ramallah and other Palestinian factions from the PLO and apparently also from Islamic Jihad. What's interesting about Haniyeh's visit to Beirut is that this is the first time he has traveled to Beirut in 27 years. That came as a surprise to me. I hadn't realized that he'd been away from Beirut for so long. I had the impression that he really traveled a lot, particularly to places which were very welcoming of Iran-sponsored groups, as Hamas really is. And not only that, it's the first time that he's visiting Beirut in 27 years, but his visit was cancelled on Monday night before being put back on the agenda yesterday morning. Apparently, he has now travelled to Beirut and is already there. And the meeting actually will be held not today, but tomorrow amongst those Palestinian factions. And they are obviously concerned about being sidelined from world plans, but I guess also US plans. We know that the Palestinian Authority in particular and their Palestinian factions in general have not seen eye to eye with the current US administration. Now they're seeing that if you do get along with the US administration, there are some advantages in it for you. As we are seeing with the United Arab Emirates, this peace arrangement that is being brokered by the US with Israel comes with some significant benefits to the United Arab Emirates, including, you know, these F-35 stealth bombers that we spoke about that the UAE will now apparently be buying from the US as part of the deal. And I'm guessing that there are many, many other more, there are greater advantages that are not necessarily being discussed in open conversation. And so I think that the Palestinian factions are suddenly starting to understand that they have potentially been sidelined by what's going on with the UAE. And even though the UAE has said, look, we're not going to forget the Palestinian cause, it clearly is a statement that they are signing an agreement, a peace agreement with Israel, and cooperating with the current U.S. administration, where the Palestinian factions have decided that this is not what they wish to do. And there is a feeling that the Arab world is kind of not as unified as it was once upon a time behind the Palestinian cause. So I think that there is certainly reason for them to be concerned. They may well be sidelined in all of this.
Yeah, and what's so fascinating is that whether they like it or not, there will be a positive impact in terms of the whole process and in terms of normalization is a very scary word for people who hate, because when things are normalized, other people who might have been on the fence look at it and say, well, hold on a minute. It's actually good coming out of this, not bad. So maybe this whole normalization thing isn't such a problem. And there's benefits to it, and people are actually moving forward in peace and not with war and with hate. So it will have an impact. And I believe ultimately, of course, even on the Palestinians, I believe that the impact will be positive, because I believe the Palestinian people will be able to see this as something positive and perhaps push back as well against leadership.
The problem is that when people hold a negative view and they hold it for so long and they continue to justify it time after time, when eventually things break through and there is peace, as we're now seeing with the UAE, those people who were haters before become sidelined because their views are now become irrelevant in the overall scheme of things. And so I think there is a philosophical danger that the strongly held views that were relevant beforehand kind of just become sidelined and become irrelevant in the new brave new world. And those people who held those views are either being forced, are either forced to change their view and potentially show themselves up to be, you know, their thinking to be slightly flawed, or they just get sidelined and they get swept up with the tide.
Mm, absolutely. World powers met yesterday with Iran to discuss the nuclear deal. Is this still going on? We're still talking about
this. This is still going on. And it is really not a headline, which makes me wonder. You know, I, on the one hand, there are other headlines going on, I know. But this whole Iranian nuclear deal is still going on. There was a meeting yesterday. Diplomats met in Vienna to discuss it. Representatives from Iran were there, along with representatives from the P5 plus one countries, of course, excluding the U.S., which has now taken itself outside of the deal. But there were delegates from France, Germany, Britain, Russia, and China talking about this Iranian nuclear deal. And the thing that worries me the most about this meeting and some of the messages that come out of it is that the final kind of statements that were made from the meeting is that the European countries plus China really are trying to do whatever they possibly can to keep this deal on track. That is the main message that has come out of this particular meeting. And has been coming out, actually, of meetings and messages from these countries already for some time, even though the U.S., as I say, has withdrawn itself from the agreement and has also tried to institute the snapback mechanism that was agreed as part of the agreement when it was finalized in 2015. There were these snapback mechanisms which would effectively implement sanctions upon Iran. The U.S. has not been successful in triggering the snapback mechanism. It went to the U.N. Security Council to try to demand that the snapback actually be implemented. And the U.N. Security Council rejected the Trump administration's demands to restore all sanctions on Iran. So what we're seeing at the moment is that the U.S. has implemented quite stringent sanctions on Iran, which have been very, very detrimental to the Iranian economy. The European members of this particular deal, however, have not implemented any sanctions. They are kind of moving forward as if though nothing happened. And we know that something has happened. And what has happened is that whether it's because of the U.S. deciding to withdraw from the agreement or not, it doesn't really matter. We know that Iran is now really restarted its uranium enrichment program at Fordow facility in violation of this deal and has threatened to continue to take further steps to reduce its commitments in terms of this deal. And yet, the European countries plus Russia plus China think that this is all okay, and they're continuing to adhere to their side of the deal in terms of supporting Iran as if though nothing has happened. This is a really worrying situation in my view.
Yeah, it really is, it's just sort of this whole notion of continuing to do the same thing over and over again, and thinking that the outcome is going to be completely different. It's very, very simply not. This is who you're dealing with, and it's quite clear as to where this will ultimately lead if this folly continues. French President Macron has been visiting Lebanon. Now, this is for the second time in the month. What's the purpose of the visit? What's the connection?
Well, obviously there is a strong connection between Lebanon and France. Lebanon was once upon a time a French protectorate, and there has continued to be a certain relationship between France and Lebanon over the years, even though since those days when France had such a strong influence over Lebanon, a lot has happened. There's been a lot of water under the bridge. And yet we're seeing a certain level of link responsibility. I don't know if that's the right word, from the French towards the Lebanese, and particularly now in this, you know, in this really difficult time for Lebanon following that explosion that took place in Beirut, which really seems to have been more than just simply a physical explosion in the city of Beirut, but it seems to have been a major explosion which has hit the whole French, the whole Lebanese political system. So the French government, in the form of President Emmanuel Macron, has visited Lebanon already now for the second time, has warned the Lebanese politicians that they risk sanctions if they don't, set the nation on a new political course. And he's given them like a 3-month period within which to sort this out. So he's taking some sort of a, like almost like a fatherly figure, responsibility for what's going on. Not only because of the economic crisis, not only because of the effects of COVID, but now because of this explosion, which has really brought devastation to the whole Lebanese economy and infrastructure. And it's interesting that we don't see, again, it's not in the headlines. It's all hidden away somewhere within the small print of the news that Macron has been visiting Lebanon, and he is apparently due to visit again before the end of this year. But in the meantime, you know, what's going on in Lebanon is really, really scary. And inevitably, when there is a vacuum, as we see now within Lebanon, there is a massive danger that that vacuum gets filled by further undesirable figures.
Absolutely.
And that's really what I think the problem is. So I think that, you know, the French government are trying to show their support towards the Lebanese people. I'm not quite sure if it comes in the form of economic support as well, but certainly Macron has been very, very eager to show his face once, twice, and potentially also a third time in another few months by visiting Beirut, by visiting Lebanon, and showing his support for the Lebanese people. I'm not sure it's going to ultimately be enough to rescue Lebanon from what they're going through right now, but certainly there is a concern that undesirables will get involved, will fill the vacuum, and could potentially present not only a threat to Israel on that border, but potentially a threat to the wider world as well.
Brian wants to know, how do the leaders of Hamas travel to Lebanon?
So I'm assuming that they probably traveled to Egypt, and then from Egypt they probably would have flown, I'm guessing, directly to Beirut.
Okay, the other story that I wanted to talk to you about, an amazing story, and an Israeli is the first non-American to become a senior member of the National Academy of Inventors. I thought this is just unbelievable. Who is this person?
So this is an Israeli scientist, Noam Eliyaz. He's a professor of materials science and engineering at Tel Aviv University. And he's somebody who's been very much involved in 3D printing, considered to be one of the pioneers of Israeli 3D printing. 3D printing we've spoken about before. It's really all the rage these days, where you have literally a printing machine that prints out, for example, car parts and things like that. The printer has a certain material rather than ink that the traditional printers that we know of use. Instead of ink, they usually have some sort of other plasticky type of material that gets fed through, and using, of course, a computer program which is linked to the printer can actually print out solid objects. And this is the whole notion of 3D printing. It's a fascinating place to go to. And what we're seeing within 3D printing is that, you know, any type of object can be printed out if certain parts can't be sourced, or if, for example, there was a whole industry of printing out 3D, using 3D printers to print masks, face masks, protective masks, for people who want to protect themselves against COVID-19. But we also see it within the car industry and the aircraft industry. And so Eliyaz has been nominated for the work that he's done, Professor Eliyaz. This will officially be conferred upon him, apparently, in a ceremony in Florida sometime next year. The American an American academic apparently heard him speak in China, became interested in his work, and then the academy said that they felt that, you know, his work was of sufficient quality to qualify him to be a senior member of this academy. What his work does is goes a lot further than simply 3D printing, but it also includes nanoform phosphate coatings, dental and bone implants, electrochemical nano coatings, and all kinds of many, many other things which I've tried to understand but have really not succeeded in doing so. So yeah, I think it's a great story.
Absolutely.
And I think something really, really important. Just some breaking news, unfortunately, how there seems to have been a terror attack at the Tapuach Junction I've just heard about. We'll have to follow that story and perhaps talk a little bit more about it tomorrow when it becomes clearer what's happened there.
Oh dear. And certainly we'll look into it on our side. It is 8:01. Anthony Reich, thank you as always for a fascinating report.